This week saw some big losses. Our conversation with comic Jerry Lewis is at hearandnow.org. But we want to take a moment to reflect on the death of comedian and social activist Dick Gregory, who also died at 84. He was born into abject poverty in 1932 in St. Louis, Missouri. He started telling jokes as a kid to keep from being made fun of. After serving in the Army's Entertainment Division, he performed in black clubs in Chicago. And then in 1951, the big break. He was called to replace an act at Hugh Hefner's Playboy Club. He was a hit, even though the crowd was all white Southern executives. As Gregory said, it was the first they'd seen a black comic not bucking his eyes, dancing, and telling mother-in-law jokes, just talking about what I read in the newspaper. What was that? Well, first of all, a warning. It was, as we're going to hear, about what blacks were called in that day, including the N-word. Roy Wood Jr. is a correspondent for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. He joins us now from St. Louis Public Radio. Roy, the 50s, before Pryor, before Cosby, before he could even enter many clubs because of segregation, what was Dick Gregory talking about?
He was talking about black comedy at that time being something that was a little more demonstrative and not always intellectually on the same plane as white comedy. So for a black man to dare to have an opinion about things that were going on in the world in the 50s, mind you, that was still very much black man stay in your place, America.
The comedy would be sort of shuck and jive. And then shall we do a couple? Because they stick with you. He was the guy who said, I went into a restaurant and they said, we don't serve colored folk here. And I said, well, that's okay. I don't eat colored folk. I was ordering some chicken and the Ku Klux Klan members who were nearby said, we're going to do to you what you do to that chicken. And he said, oh, really? And picked it up and kissed it. He was talking about what nobody talked about.
To think about that Klan intimidation humor in the 50s.
When people were being lynched.
I call it juggling dynamite. That's what I call it in the professional comedy world, where you can take something that could really tick off a lot of people and still manage to stick the landing without the dynamite going off in your hand. And Dick Gregory was a master of that.
Yeah. Segregation is not all bad, he said. Have you ever heard of a collision where the people in the back of the bus got hurt? Let's listen to some of his earlier performance talking about black power.
White folks in this country dirtied up the word black. Not us. White folks in America corrupted power. Not us. And then one day we come free. One day we come through with two innocent words, black power, and everybody go crazy. But had we said brown strength, oh, everybody would have accepted that. Hell, we wouldn't be able to walk down the street without white folks greeting us. Brown strength, my brother, brown strength.
You could take the premise of a lot of Dick Gregory jokes, and it would feel and read like something of an activist. But it's the back half of those bits where he turns from the premise into the punchline where he gets you to laugh. But the beginning of that joke is a full-blown indictment of white people and the vilification of the word black. There's no corners cut in that premise. But yet, I believe that to be a joke everybody could laugh at.
Again, if you put it in context, that word black was frightening to people. It hadn't been used before. It had been colored or Negro. That word black was a lightning rod that he seized. And I'm thinking, too, when he went on Jack Parr's show, the first Tonight Show, he said, I want to sit on the couch. And he became the first black to do that, which you can't, now that you think of the stream, Kevin Hart, Dave Chappelle, you, that's amazing. That there was a time when there was a first. What did he mean for you as a comic?
Granted, I only saw him perform two or three times in my career, but every time I left feeling the need to become a better person, which to me is larger than comedy. You know, it's one thing to see one of the greats that are doing it today and go, man, I got to write better jokes. I got to work on my stage presence. I got to work on my delivery. But I would see Dick Gregory, and instantly, I felt like I wasn't doing enough as a person. I used to joke back in the day that you'd see a Dick Gregory show and leave and, like, try and start four charities. Like, you would just call up your accountant, listen, I got to do something. I did 501(c), 501(4), 501(5). Yeah. I need to do all the 50Cs.
Because he was so involved in so many causes, African-American health. He was overweight at one point, cigarette smoker, became a vegetarian, and encouraged others to reject fried foods, fat foods.
Yes.
He went on hunger strikes to bring awareness to the Vietnam War, women's rights, apartheid in South Africa, American Indian rights. I mean, he was so busy being good.
And somewhere in the midst of all of that, still had time to go swing by a comedy club and entertain 200 or 300 people. You know, I feel like the legacy he's left behind, I hope, is enough to inspire that next wave of black comedians to be as bold and to be as daring, because you're sometimes staring in the face of doing what will help your people versus what will help your career. Hmm. And those two things don't always align themselves, but they definitely didn't align themselves for Dick Gregory, you know, between the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Because I just have to put this into context. To demand the couch on a show, like, there's no comic today in the much more calmer racial and entertainment climate that we have now versus the 50s who would make that career dice roll. I know a lot of shows make you submit your jokes. Forget asking for the couch. We want to see what jokes you're going to tell, type them out, and send them to us so that we can look through them. That just shows you how bold he was and how unique of a spirit he was.
He was jailed in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963. He wrote, "It was the first really good beating I've ever had in my life." Ha, ha, ha. You know, sort of a bitter comedy there. And then there's the autobiography. It was titled Nigger, an Autobiography, 1964. What was his goal with that?
I think it was to shock people. To me, just the title alone is a classic mirror to society. Since you're going to call me this word, then this is who I am. So come figure out who I am and know about my life.
Yeah, that's what a comic is, a mirror to society.
Oh, 100%. I feel like to some degree, stand-up comedy is one of the purest forms of journalism. We see the same things you see, and then we report on it with a little bit more of a slant.
Of an edge.
Yes.
Well, so he's mirroring back that word, also claiming it, as he wrote in the foreword to his deceased mother, "Wherever you are, if you ever hear the word nigger again, remember they're advertising my book." And here he is on Late Night with David Letterman performing it in 1984.
One thing about America, we are able to talk about ethnic slurs and flush it out. You know, what happens when you're in a country where they talk a foreign language and you don't know what they said about you? See, I had that happen to me in Russia. My wife and I were walking down the street, and Lillian just smiling, waving at this Russian. So I said, "What's wrong with you?" She said, "He just said hello. You don't know what he said." He said, "Oh, he might have called you a nigger." She said, "Well, what must I do next time?" I said, "Do what I do. Just smile, say same to you and your mama."
So, you know, and that was televised, and we're reminded that, as you said, sometimes your jokes today are screened, and you might try to slip an immigration joke past bookers, and you can't?
Well, I did successfully with Letterman, but you will tend to find that a lot of the edgier humor that pushes the envelope, you will not find in the late night 4.5-minute format on television these days. And a lot of that has to do with the networks and producers wanting a particular type of image or not wanting to stir the pot. And we're definitely in much more of a political backlash culture now than ever existed where comedy is concerned. So it still happens, but I believe it happens more in the longer form, half-hour specials that you more often see on, you know, your Comedy Centrals and your Netflix and your Showtimes and HBOs.
Roy, as we go out, do you have a Dick Gregory moment?
To me, the one that just always has stuck with me is the one real conversation I had with Mr. Gregory, and I just asked him, why does he still travel? He was knocking on 80. And you have to understand, this dude was traveling the same as a regular road comic. I don't know his full schedule, but I know Dick Gregory was always out of town. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 200 days a year on average, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 days a month. This dude was out there. And I couldn't figure it out. And I know what it takes to maintain a travel schedule that's grueling and wears your body down. And he just said, son, the fight for freedom is out there. It ain't at my house.
Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, and his Comedy Central special, Father Figure, released this year. Roy, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, more Dick Gregory. He, his wife, and their 11 kids had just bought a house in a white neighborhood.
So we got about 11 inches of snow in Chicago, and I grabbed my shovel, went out, started cleaning the snow off my new front, and my neighbors pulled up. She jumped out the car and rushed up to me. She said, hey, boy! She said, you're really doing a wonderful job on these people's front. If you only knew... She said, yep, I've been living next door here for the last 50 years, and I've never seen this place looking this good in the wintertime. What do you get for doing that? I said, oh, I get to sleep with that woman inside.
It's here now.